This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Brigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good morning, Wally. How are you? I was thinking we're not going to have a show today.
I don't know if our listeners... We're listening. We've had a couple of minor technical difficulties this morning, but it looks like we've gotten through them. I'm hearing an echo. That's the challenges of doing these shows remotely. Our thanks to our producer Brandon, who's working feverishly to try and has managed to get on the air. A little bit worried, as you said, Naz, we weren't going to have a show today, but we're here. And we're coming up on the show today. We'll be talking to author Jim Lang. You may remember Jim from the Brady and Lang shows. Written several books, and he's got a new one out with Bob McKenzie. More inspiring stories about our game, everyday hockey heroes, and certainly looking forward to speaking to Jim about his book, and perhaps we'll take the time to talk about his career, some of his career highlights. Also, was voice of the Toronto Argonauts for a while. So Jim's a veteran broadcaster. He's up at the Region 105.9 now, and certainly look forward to him. He's got a great book coming out this week, Simon & Schuster, and we're certainly pleased to chat with him about that. Later on in the hour, Naz, we haven't talked soccer, or as they say on the other side of the pond, football. We haven't talked soccer in a while. TFC's had a good, if not great, season. I haven't had an opportunity to chat about it. TFC's got their final game today. They're in the hunt for what they call the Supporters' Shield. And if they win today and Philadelphia ties or loses, TFC will be crowned the best team in MLS during the regular season. And Kadmine, I spoke to him. We're talking to Kadmine Marcantonio. Spoke to him yesterday. He's brought me up to date on the Canadian national men's soccer team. There's some exciting stuff going on in the red and white in soccer and the men's side in Canada as we get ready for the 2026 World Cup. Naz, we got delayed about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes at the beginning of the show, but I haven't lost my enthusiasm for what happened.
Notre Dame!
The Fighting Irish, my beloved Fighting Irish. What a game. Double overtime against the number one team, Clemson. Clemson hadn't lost. I think it was the fourth longest winning streak, regular season winning streak in NCAA history. And Notre Dame had to go to double overtime, but we finally made it happen. What an exciting game, Naz, from a Notre Dame a fanatic like myself. We chatted with Joe Bowen last Sunday about Notre Dame, and certainly it's been a long time coming for to be able to celebrate such a momentous game for the Fighting Irish. But for from a non-Fighting Irish perspective, Naz, you're the big Alabama guy. This probably vaults Alabama to number one, no doubt about that. Ohio State will probably be number two. I would guess Notre Dame's going to push up to number three.
Notre Dame's going to two.
They're going to two? Well,
and Alabama's one. Clemson goes four.
Anyways, you're the Alabama guy. I'm sure you must have watched part of the game last night. What'd you think about it?
I thought they played really well. They almost gave it up, but they scored in the last 2 minutes to tie it up, and then they traded field goals and touchdowns, and then they went ahead. Notre Dame was full marks for their victory, and they looked pretty good, Wally.
Yeah, no, they. I will say that I've been critical of Ian Book over the course of the last little while. He coughed up. I thought when he coughed up that fumble when he was headed towards the goal line, that was going to get Notre Dame there again. I thought that would change the tide of the game, and And he got the ball with about a minute and 40 or 2 minutes left in the game, deep in the Notre Dame zone, and ran it all the way up the field for a tying touchdown. So they go to overtime. That, you know, I didn't think Ian Book had it in him, but he certainly, when the chips were down last night, he brought his A game. So kudos to the Fighting Irish. Interestingly enough, of the four longest streaks in NCAA history, I think Notre Dame has broken three of them now. They beat Oklahoma in the 50s, Miami in the late 80s, and now Clemson. So we'll chalk that one up. Critics will say that Clemson obviously was playing at South Bend. They were missing their franchise quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, but you certainly didn't miss much with this freshman that was in there. He passed for 427 yards, which is a record against the Notre Dame defense. Clemson was missing a couple of stars on their defense, and the reality is both of these teams are probably headed to another showdown in the ACC championship, which probably Clemson will get a chance to settle the score. Alabama, Nasday, I think they had a bye.
Supposed to have crowd restraint in the stadium. There were a lot of people in that stadium last night.
Apparently, there were 15,000 students, only students. For those of you that didn't watch the game or didn't see the ending, which happened probably it was around 11:30 last night, it held up Saturday Night Live. A lot of people tuned into NBC wanting to watch Saturday Night Live post-election, and we're still watching the double overtime Notre Dame-Clemson game. There was a mob scene on the pitch, on the field after the game. Some of those young students were wearing masks, some weren't. I read a comment from Brian Kelly, who warned his team and his coaching staff, we better get off the field as soon as this game's over. So I guess the young people wanted to celebrate, and it's tough to take that away from them, given the magnitude of the victory last night. But the coaching staffs and whatever hustled themselves off the field. Anyways, Naz, great game for the Fighting Irish. Alabama's number one. Florida's coming down the pipe against Alabama. Seems to be their biggest challenge in the SEC. We've got to go to break. We're running a bit behind, and we're coming back with Jim Lang. We'll be right back. I guess we don't get a commercial break. We had to use up a couple before the game, so we're going to try and get Jim on the phone. We'll get him on the air. As we said, a couple of technical difficulties we're trying to get through today, but we've worked it out. We'll get Jim Lang on the phone, and we'll certainly look forward to talking about his book and his career. Naz, are you still with me?
I'm still here.
Okay, Naz. We're going to go to break. We just sort of chopped off our NCAA discussion, so we can carry that for a couple of more moments.
What about the fact that the Raptors are going to probably be playing in Nashville? Kind of an empty feeling to me. I'd rather have the team here if possible.
Well, they can't have them here while we have the government travel restrictions. And that's a good point, Naz. Certainly tough to watch the Raptors play in Nashville, but they have to play somewhere. And then the NBA starting their season up, which is, I think they're starting up December 22nd, if I'm not mistaken. That's got a few of the players upset. Just gonna check if we got Jim Lang on the phone. Brandon, do we have Jim Lang on the phone? Brandon, I can't hear him. I know I'm talking to my producer on Skype.
Hi, Wally. Hi, Naz. Can you hear me?
Oh, we finally got you. First of all, Jim, our apologies. We've had a couple of technical difficulties this morning. We've been doing this show remotely since March. We've been on the air for 5.5 years, and the first time this has happened. So we're working through it. Brandon, our producer, is doing his absolute best, dealing with the challenges. But Jim, do we have you now?
Oh yeah, loud and clear. You guys sound great, and I was enjoying the Raptors discussion.
Okay, fantastic. Maybe we'll get back to it when we wrap up with you. Jim, you're a veteran broadcaster. You certainly understand the perils of live radio. And
Oh, yes.
We're dealing with those challenges this morning, but we got you, and it's great. You got a new book coming out. It's called Everyday Hockey Heroes, Simon & Schuster, November 10th. Some great stories, some inspiring stories about our game. Co-author with Bob McKenzie. First of all, our congratulations on I know it's already, I've read some of the Twitter reviews. Some people are thrilled about the book. You've taken hockey and dug deep. You've gone after some inspiring stories from people who are connected to the game of hockey in so many different ways. A lot of, as you say, everyday heroes. Jim, I will turn it over to you. Tell us about the book. Tell us about the inspiration. Tell us about some of the great people that you write about.
Yeah, it started a couple of years ago, and I was contacted by Simon & Schuster and one of their top editors, Sarah St. Pierre, and they had a concept for this book called Everyday Hockey Heroes. And we started working on it, and the hope was that Bob McKenzie would come on board and be a co-author to give it a good push because of who he is and his profile. And we started working away at it and putting some chapters together. Then he saw what it was about and how the chapters were coming together. Then he hopped on board, and we were able to, you know, put it together, and it sold well and did well. And they decided they liked it so much they wanted to do it again. So September of last year, I sat when we were where we, at this time it seems so long ago. September of last year, when we were allowed to all sit in the boardroom and discuss and have a meeting, I sat in the boardroom at Simon & Schuster with the editors and Bob McKenzie. We sort of mapped up how we wanted the book to look. But little did we know COVID was going to hit. So we were doing a lot of the work before COVID, and then COVID hit, and then finishing it after COVID. And we just find that this is the second time we've done Everyday Hockey Heroes, and really getting a sense for perseverance in hockey, overcoming injuries, overcoming, just who you are, trying to be someone of the LGBTQ community in hockey, being a woman in hockey. Different ways to get into hockey. There's a chapter about Alexandra Mandzukic, and she's an analytics genius, and she now works for the Seattle Kraken, the new Seattle NHL franchise. And when she started going to university, she was a math engineer, a mathematics specialist, not dreaming that she'd ever be part of the NHL someday. She barely even watched the NHL, and then a few years later now, she's a valued member of an NHL front office cracking numbers because that's like her genius. And so that's the thing I enjoy about it is all the different stories. And you think, okay, I've heard this name before. I know the story. Then you start working with them. You're like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, it even inspires you to sort of assemble their chapters and put it together.
Naz?
Jim, how far do the stories go back?
For the individuals, it goes back quite a bit from the beginning. Like Andrew Cogliano, who we wrote about, talks about being a young kid growing up in Vaughan. And he admitted right away, for whatever reason, skating came easy to him. And it's kind of funny. There's a photo in his chapter. The local Vaughan paper took a photo of him. He must have been 8 years old at a rep hockey tournament. And he looked at it when they put it in the book. He said, that's the same way I skate now. Even at eight, he had the right skating stance, the edge work and everything. He just was a natural as a skater. And then through his parents, good work ethic from both his mother and father. And like you show up, you come ready, you're prepared physically and mentally, you go to work. And that's what his parents did every day in their respective jobs. And that's how he approached his NHL career. And at one point he had played well over 800 games, and the only reason the streak got broken was for an arguable suspension for a hit. Otherwise, he could have had the all-time NHL Ironman streak. And so we go back to right at the beginning for a lot of these people, why they liked hockey, why they got into hockey, why hockey was important to them and how they got into it and how it became such a big part of their lives.
Talking about Andrew Cogliano, and you say he at the age of eight, I actually, just so you're aware, Jim, we know that you're doing some great work at the Region 105.9. Naz and I are both York Region guys. I'm a Vaughan Richmond Hill guy. Naz is a King City Nobleton guy. We spent a lot of time in minor hockey arenas with our sons when we were a few years back, and I actually remember watching Andrew Cogliano play. He had a teammate of his was near and dear to me at the age of five for the Vaughan Panthers. He was 5 years old and he was skating up the ice faster than anybody, playing a year above. And you could tell there was something special about this kid at the age of five. And sort of watched his career as it developed. And as you say, you know, Iron Man, and it's such a shame that they took for what was a questionable suspension. But he seems to have handled it well. He's doing some great work in with the Dallas Stars, and he's the great work that a lot of these people that you talked about in your book. Every single one of them is contributing in ways for the better of society in a lot of different ways. Cogliano in his charity for dogs, and mm-hmm. so many of these other people in so many different facets of life, which comes back to the inspirational part of the book. Can you talk about a few of those, Jim?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm in my 50s, so when I started playing hockey, a lot of the subjects we talk about weren't even considered. A woman refereeing an NHL game, like Katie Gay, the need for something like Pride Tape, the rainbow tape to support gay and lesbian rights in hockey. You know, people dealing with different disabilities and still being involved in hockey. A woman being a player agent. We write about Emily Castingay, who was the player agent for Alexis Lafreniere, the number one pick in the draft. You know, she is legit player agent. She's a power broker now in the NHL. And, I'm inspired by all of them. But one story that really got me was this kid, Jack Jablonski, who is on his way to becoming a high school hockey phenom in Minnesota. And you guys know Minnesota high school hockey is a big deal. It's like our AAA midget in the GTA, in the GTHL, and the Vaughn Kings and stuff like that. And you know, he's 16, and he just gets hit the wrong way, and he breaks his neck. And right away, he's paralyzed from the chest down. And he thought, well, that's it. But hockey was such a big part of his life, and he loved hockey so much. And he stayed a part of it and kept connected with it. And he ended up getting a degree at USC, and now he works for the LA Kings and their social media department, and hosting a weekly, hockey podcast for the team. So he's got a job in hockey. He found a way, despite his disability, to stay in hockey because that's his life. And he's got a big charity to help people with spinal cord injuries. What is interesting to me is what a lot of the stories is people involved in the NHL who came to the aid of other people, different people involved in the Anaheim Ducks, came to the aid of Jack Jablonski. Anaheim was in Minnesota. They visited the hospital room and they pulled Jack's dad aside. He said, hey, I think we know there's an organization in California that could help this kid. And they helped him. And then there's a chapter about the Pride Tape, and it was Bill Ranford, the former Stanley Cup winning goalie with the Edmonton Oilers, who helped these guys, Jeff McClain and Dean Petruk. He said, hey, I think I can help you guys get this going. So this is where some NHLers do good things, and you don't even know about it, but you'll read about it in the book, that behind the scenes, quietly in their own way, help people for the betterment of the game.
Yes,
Jim, I remember asking Daryl Sittler one time if he wanted to get into management or coaching ever. And he surprised me. He said he was offered the coaching job in 1996 when they fired Pat Burns. Do you have anything like that in your book?
Well, yeah, actually, Daniel Sauvageau, who was the coach of the women's Olympic hockey team in 2012 when they won the gold medal in Salt Lake City. And I mean, how she fought through, basically when she was in a small town in Quebec and wanted to be involved in hockey and play hockey, and she had played pond hockey her whole life. And when she went to sign up for hockey in the 70s, the conveners looked at her and said, like, no, there's no girls hockey here. And then she said, well, I don't care. There's no girls hockey. I'm going to find a way to stay involved. And eventually became a rink rat, was involved in the rink and started helping people coach, became a coach, started coaching at different levels and just willed herself as a coach to become the coach of the Canadian National Women's Hockey Team. And what she had to go through just to get to Salt Lake City, and then that gold medal game where all those penalties were called against them and finding a way to win, it was pretty amazing. You realize, you see her, you know, with the team winning a gold medal, but I had no idea at the time that all the hurdles she had to jump over just to get there, let alone coach the team to the gold medal. And then the build up to Salt Lake City, at the time especially, the women's team were not funded as well as the men's team. So what they had to do, they had to go and basically knock on doors and ask for equipment and ask for help and ask for this. And different people, corporate partners, stepped up to help them. And it's much different now for women's hockey in Canada. But definitely stories like that. And then Bob McKenzie writes a tremendous chapter to start the book about, being a black kid playing hockey in Scarborough in the 60s and 70s and what it was like and how different, you know, Scarborough and the Toronto area was like that in the 60s and 70s and how hard it was for a person of color to play hockey at that time.
We're talking to Jim Lang. The book is Everyday Hockey Heroes, More Inspiring Stories About Our Game. Jim, with your permission, we'd love to chat a little bit about you as well.
Sure.
We had Don Landry on the show. I can't remember how many years back now. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago. And I've always been a fan, 590 fan, always listened in. And I kidded with Don Landry that time. I said, my wife was getting jealous because I used to wake up with him every morning. For a couple of years, it was Brady and Lang at Sportsnet. How'd you get into the broadcasting business? Tell us that whole story. Was it a lifelong dream of yours, or you sort of that's your path took a certain path and you just ended up there?
Well, Wally, I'm going to tell you, 6 degrees of separation. I actually started my radio career with Don Landry at a small radio station in Barrie, and he was the year ahead of me at Humber College. By the time I hit grade 13, I decided I want to become broadcasting because we had grade 13 back then. So I went to Humber College and Don Landry was already there. He was a year ahead of me. Then he got hired to work at this radio station in Barrie with an AM station that doesn't exist. It's an FM station now. And then I got hired. So he did the evening show and I did the all night show. And so we sort of followed each other along the way. And then we ended up, at different stations together at different times. So, yeah. So I, just kind of grinding it out and paying your dues, working at different stations. I was in Montreal. I was in Toronto. I was in Barrie. And what happened was when I started, there was no sports radio and barely any sports TV. So most radio stations had a sportscaster or sports reporters as part of the rest of the newsroom because there just was no old sports. And as I started going through my career, then the Fan had started in different sports. So I started getting basically full-time into sports in about 95. And then from there did everything you could to pay my dues and work my way up to sort of carve out a bit of a career in it.
Nez, you still with us?
Yeah, I just got, yeah. Jim, I didn't know you were the voice of the Toronto Argonauts. What was that like?
Oh, that was amazing. I in 98 and 99, I was the sideline reporter and pregame and halfgame host with Bob Rutina and Pete Martin. And it was fabulous. And then the station I was at didn't have the rights, and then they got the rights back, and they asked me, would you like to do the play-by-play? Because I had already done a football play-by-play for CHTV for OUA football. And I said, oh, I would absolutely love to do it. And it was a great experience. And it was really, it opens your eyes. Play-by-play is very difficult. Every stadium is different. Every arena is different. I remember Joe Bowen telling me, you don't realize, certain arenas, the way the press box is situated where you call the game from, sometimes the players look like ants. Some are better than others, and it's true. And then, when you're in different stadiums and the sight lines and everything, and it was, I really liked it. It was a great experience, and I got to meet a lot of great people. And it was a big help to me, 100% for sure.
You're talking about, I have to bring this one in, Jim. You're talking about play-by-play and how difficult it is. Let me tell you, the Naz, by the way, was the voice of the York Yeoman.
Oh.
Back in the mid-70s, Naz and I used to do York Yeoman games. Is that what they were called, Naz? I think they're called the York Lions now. I think in those days they were called the York
Yeoman. It was the Yeoman.
Yeah, we used to do the games. We used to do them on cable television. And we used to do them from the penalty box in the old York Ice Palace. I'm not sure it even exists anymore, but it must have been. We used to do those games, and it was minus 95 inside the arena. And Naz and I used to have to duck pucks from the penalty box. So doing play-by-play has its challenges. We did it the hard way. We're talking to Jim Lang. Jim, we've got just a couple of minutes left. We do want to let our listeners know what you're up to today. You're doing the Jim Lang Show on the Region 105.9. You've been there for a while. Tell us about what you're doing up there and all about the station.
I mean, my family and I, we've lived in Newmarket, 17 years. And this business contractually of one had ended, and then I was a free agent, and then they were starting the station in December of 2013, and he said, would I be interested? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was based in York Region. I live in York Region. Commuting was easier. It's better for family, especially with the age of my kids at the time. And yeah, I've been there ever since, and I really love it. And gives us, you know, there's so much that happens in, you know, I find, I guess, with the world now, there's so much happens in our own community, in our own neighborhood, in our own backyard, that we become oblivious to because we get bombarded with American news and national news and Netflix and satellite this, but you forget sometimes, then you're missing out. There's events and charities and different things, really cool things happening in and around you that after the fact, like, I didn't know that. Well, that's what we're trying to do, is let people know that so they don't miss out on those things and they don't miss out on stuff happening in their community they can be involved in. And because there's a danger if we this kind of radio, television, print, digital, if it's not around, then people will just live like and get all their information from someone else and won't know anything what's happening in their own community. So we're really big on local, let people know what's happening with news and traffic and everything, and whether it's York Region police updates or something, the mayors need to get information out. It's a way, it's a conduit of information, let them know what's happening in their own community.
I'm talking to Jim Lang. The book is out this week, Jim Lang and Bob McKenzie. It's Everyday Hockey Heroes, more inspiring stories about our game. It's about comebacks. It's about milestones. It's about friendship. It's Simon & Schuster. It will be available in all the usual channels to buy books. I highly recommend the book. It'd be a great present for somebody to find under a Christmas tree or any other holiday celebration event of any kind, whatever your persuasion. And Jim, I'm going to leave it off this way with you. I have to ask you. This week is Remembrance Day. On your on your Wikipedia profile, you describe yourself as a military historian. You're actually born in Verdun over in France. It's Remembrance Day. Some thoughts from a military historian.
Well, my father was in the RCAF, and we were posted in Europe at the time. And then my dad spent over 30 years in the military. My uncle was in the war in Sicily, in Italy, in Holland. And I had a good friend of mine from high school, went to Afghanistan for a couple of times. So this has always been important to me. And, my family, my in-laws were Dutch immigrants who were liberated by Canadian soldiers in the war. So we take it seriously in our house, and we think it's important to pause for a moment on Remembrance Day and wear a poppy and pay respect. And, you know, we are a different country than America or other countries. But so I just think it's a small price to pay for take a moment of your day and, you know, 30 seconds, 60 seconds on Remembrance Day at 11 a.m. and just pause and say thank you. That's all basically anyone's asking. Just say thank you and just go about your business. And I think that's the least we can do.
Jim Lang, I just on behalf of Naz, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We wish you all the best on the book. It's a valuable book. We encourage our listeners to pick up a copy. Thanks again once so much for joining us and sharing the book with us and sharing some of your career with us as well. We really appreciate it.
Wally, Naz, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Jim Lang. Naz, got to take it to break, and then we're going to talk some soccer, some TFC. We haven't talked about the Reds in a long time. And we've got Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer, Carmen and Marcantonio. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville announced the Medium Gourmet Pizza Special. Get a medium gourmet pizza for just $13.99. That's like flying first class when you only paid economy. You're up front, sipping champagne and stretching out in your luxuriously wide berth. Instead of having somebody kick the back of your seat, then the guy in front of you decides to recline his
Pizzaville,
seat.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Are you real ready? If you're a real estate agent, we can help you sell more homes. A business owner? We'll help show it off to the community at large. And if you're a homeowner, we'll supply accurate floor plans for every room in your home. Because selling property is all in the details. Real Tours Media, creators of 3D virtual tours, walkthrough video, HDR photography, logos, and brands. Check out the one-stop shop for successful real estate agents. RealToursMedia.ca.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are on the new AM 740 in Toronto, 96.7 FM on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer, Carmine Marcantonio. Carmine, how are you this morning?
Hey, Walter, good morning to you and Naz. I'm well, thank you. And, you know, these are strange times for all of us, troubled time. But thank God, myself and family are well. And I hope you and your families and Naz's family are also doing well.
We're all doing well, and thank you so much for that, Kadmina.
Thanks, Pat.
Much appreciated. Kadmina, let's get into it. We haven't talked soccer, or as they say on the other side of the pond, football, in a long time. And our beloved TFC Reds have had a successful season, a little bit under the radar screen. But today's the last day in MLS regular season. Right now, our beloved Reds, TFC, are tied with the Philadelphia Union for the Supporters' Shield. Actually, unfortunately, they lose the tiebreaker formula, which is net goals. So something's got to happen today whereby TFC gets one more point, gets a result that gives them one more point than Philadelphia, and they would be the number one team overall for the season. Carmine, bring us up to date. What kind of a season? Interestingly enough, TFC hasn't been playing recently at BMO Field unless they are playing other Canadian teams. They've been playing out of Hartford, Connecticut, which sort of keeps them off the radar screen as well. Your impressions of the season so far? I understand Pauzuelo has had a fantastic year, MVP candidate. Bring us up to date, Carmine.
Actually, just yesterday, I had a text from Bill Manning, and he mentioned what you just said, that they've been competing out of Hartford for, against American teams, and then as you said, a beam of width against the Canadian teams. And it's been a strange season, as we all know, because, with no fans and wanting just needing to watch the games on TV, empty stands. It's just a bit sad, you know. But that's with professional sports is in the same condition, and it's tough for the players. You know, myself, years and years ago, when I played at the highest level, at least in North America, you know, it was always pleasant to play in packed stadium. I remember games played at the Giant Stadium against the Cosmos with 77,000 people at Olympic Stadium with the Manic. You know, we had crowds of 60,000 plus. So, and then when we played in some other stadium with smaller crowds, it's not the same feeling for players. But you know, the TFC is done well. I mean, they're basically. You know, the last game of the season, and they're challenging for the best team in the league. So that means it's been a positive year. So Bill Manning told me that you know, he's very pleased with the team. The team has done well, and hopefully they can pull it through with at least you know, with getting a win for the last game of the season, which I think they need to get into the playoff because they haven't played that well. In the past couple of games, and hopefully they win, and Philadelphia doesn't win, you know, and another, it will be another championship, at least Supporters' Shield, that's what it is. And that could be, I think that'd be the second one in just 3-4 years. So that's been amazing for this team that made the history in Toronto.
Carmen, you're involved with youth soccer. How is youth soccer been affected by this virus?
By the virus, Nas, you're saying?
How has it been affected, the youth soccer? Are they playing? Or
at the youth level. Okay, sorry, I didn't get that. I've been in touch with some people in the game that are still involved very much in the game. And, you know, from one has been the coach of the under-17, the Juventus team that we've had as we hosted here in Toronto for about 3 years, and Francesco is still coaching at the academy at Juventus, and he told me that it's been very challenging for them, and they're not playing right now in Europe, and the same thing in North America. The academies are basically being shut down, and they're just basically practicing. And even that, it's a challenge to practice because if you know, if one of the players gets tested positive, and there's been a lot of positive, you know, positiveness for the virus at every level, at the professional level, the youth level, but they shut down completely. If it's one player that results positive, that means that they have to train individually or in small groups, keeping distances, and the leagues I think all over the world pretty well have been, you know, closed for the time being. And it's a bit of a travesty. Like this virus has been, it put the world upside down. Let's put it this way. And soccer, football, and all the other sports have suffering, and especially at the youth level, as you mentioned, and the amateur level. I mean, thank God we still have professional, you know, being professional sports, football still being played. At least we enjoy that on TV or in the social media. I'm watching a lot of championship soccer in social media, which is you know, the Zone or whatever, the Zan. I can never say exactly
the Zone. Yeah. Cool.
But you know, at least that much for us that. We're staying at home. Even myself working remotely, you know, enjoying some golf outdoors. So it's been a troubled time, but we have to live with this, and hopefully we get through it soon, and we can see fans in the stands again, and youth, the academy soccer will, amateur soccer will start again, and we get some type of normalcy, you know, normal times again, you know.
We're talking to Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer Carmen and Marcantonio. Carmen, talking about youth soccer, let's talk about the next generation of men, Canadian men's soccer. As we head towards the 2026 World Cup, of which part will be played in Canada, These are exciting times for Canadians men's soccer. Alphonso Davies, I think he's 19 years old, is now considered perhaps the best 19-year-old soccer, the most valuable 19-year-old soccer player in the world, a Canadian.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Walter, because I was reading a magazine from Europe, from Italy, and basically they had ranked the top youth players. I'm talking about age 21 or under, and Alphonso was valued, as you said, as number one in the rankings, and his value is it's something crazy that I couldn't believe when I saw that. About 180 million. I don't know if those were dollars or
no. Those were euros.
And you know, it's just phenomenal. You know, considering that only about 3 years ago, Bayern Munich bought Alphonso Davies from Vancouver for just around 20 million.
Canadian.
Just amazing, because he had an exceptional year last year, winning the triple in Germany with the Champions League, the domestic league, and also the German Cup. And he was, you know, he started all the games last year. This is at a bad injury, too bad for Alphonso, because he's going to be out for a while. But it's a young man that has done well for Bayern Munich, and is going to do well for Canada. It bodes well for Canada, because there's another young man that I want to talk to you about, and that is David. I forget his first name, but he's playing now in Lille. And he spent the last 3-4 years. He's also around like Alphonso. They're the two forwards for Canada. Center forward, David is center forward. Played in Bruges. He was a top scorer in Belgium league. And this year he got purchased by Lille in France. And Lille is, I think, with Paris Saint-Germain, I think they're the top two teams in France. And they, just the other day, he started a game against AC Milan in Milan, and Lille won 3-0 handily. And David saw the highlights, and he assisted in a couple of goals. And he's valued at around 60-plus million euros. And, he's ranked number 16th in value as a young footballer. So we got two Canadian players, believe it or not, that are top 20 in the world rankings, and it bodes well for Canadian football and going forward and trying to qualify for the World Cups.
Yeah, that's
Jonathan David.
Yes,
thanks
right.
for that. Now,
it's certainly
an exciting time in Canadian soccer. Who would have ever thought that you'd have two of the brightest young talents in the world, Canadian, and that's you know that is just incredible. It's taken an incredible long period, and to have the Alphonso, the number one most valuable young player in the world, a Canadian. Man, I got to think about that one.
How serious is his injury, Carmen?
I'm sorry. Now,
how serious is this injury,
Alphonso?
Oh, you know what? Apparently, I think it's an ankle injury, and I didn't see it. Apparently, it was one of the first few games in the German league, and there was a tackle that he went into, and he came out of that tackle with a serious ankle injury. So, you know, for soccer players, knee and ankles are the most common injuries, and you know, hopefully he's going to recover, because in Germany they have amazing, physiotherapy and sports injury medicine. It's one of the top in the world, and I'm sure that he'll come through this. Hopefully he's going to be ready by January, I think. That's what. But another player that I want to mention, it's too bad that we messed up, the Canadian soccer messed up on this, in this case, is and I forget his name, the center forward, I forget now the name with the TFC now that is taken Altidore's place. Help me out, Walter.
It starts with. I had difficulty pronouncing it. I think it's Akinawa or
Akinawa.
Yeah, he's 20. He's a 20-year-old.
Right.
20-year-old.
Yeah, and too bad that we lost him because he's a Canadian boy from Brampton, but he was born, I believe, in Detroit. Okay, and somehow Canadian soccer legend slipped through the cracks because what happened. I think is that he tried in the tryout, he got cut or whatever, and it reminds me a bit of another situation with Owen Hargreaves when he played for England, and the same thing happened there. He got cut as a 16-year-old, and then he went to play. Actually, he went to play Owen Hargreaves. I don't know if you remember.
Yes, sure do.
Playing Bayern Munich and Manchester
and
United
Manchester.
After Bayern Munich, and then he played for England in the World Cup. And the same with Akinawa, the same thing. He's now playing, representing the U.S. because he was born in the States, and we kind of slipped, Canadian soccer slipped out there because of that. Maybe they didn't foresee the talent of this young man, and he's done very well for TFC, and I'm sure he's going to do well for the American national team. And it's too bad that he cannot be. Being playing for Canada because that's another great talent that we have. But we have another. The good thing is that the future bodes well for Canada. We have some young, young players coming to the academies of Toronto FC and Montreal and Vancouver, and also I know one kid that is a son of a friend of mine. Gabriel Pellegrino, he was with 4 or 5 years with the Toronto TFC Academy, and he just signed a contract with the Academy in the Freiburg, I can never say that name, which is a top team in Germany. Actually, a teammate of mine, ex-teammate of mine, Birkenmeier, he was the starting goalkeeper for this Freiburg team. Okay, they've been on top league in Germany in the Bundesliga, and he's there with the academy in the under-17, and maybe one day we'll see another young Canadian coming to the ranks of German football or Bundesliga. Maybe in a couple 2-3 years he could possibly make the first team, and we may see him in the Canadian colors with because for Canadian talent besides coming to the ranks of the academies, the other option, and a lot of Canadian boys have done that, going to Europe, the development there is amazing. And I think any Canadian boy that goes there early enough, 15, 16, 17, they got a chance to make it through the ranks, through the pros, and hopefully play for Canada one day. And that's, I think, that's what's happening. We benefit from that because, in Europe, as you know, both of you know, the development of youth, it's amazing what they do with the young players there,
We've been talking to Kahneman and Marcantonio, Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer. Certainly positive times for Canadians men's soccer as we develop some of the best young stars in the world. Certainly look forward to the next few years in Canadian soccer. Kahneman, unfortunately, we've got to go. We didn't even get a chance to talk about my beloved Azzurri. Anyways, I'll give you 10 seconds. Are the Azzurri on the way back?
Well, Azzurri, I'm hoping to be in the European Cup next year. I was planning to go this year, but, with COVID, it's been postponed for next year. And they're looking really good. They're one of the top-ranking teams right now in Europe. So we hope that they do well. And in this, Champions
League.
There's so many leagues nowadays. Nations League, whatever they're playing now.
On that note, Kahneman, unfortunately, we got to go.
Yeah.
We will pick up that guys.
All the best to you. Stay well, stay safe, and all the best. Anytime we'll chat, it's always a pleasure to chat football with both of you.
Always a pleasure. Kahneman and Marcantonio. Thank you, Kahneman. And as minute and a half left, there's a big game down in Orchard Park today. The Bills and the Seahawks. Give me your analysis. The Bills have not done well against the top echelon team.
Both defenses are struggling. Both offenses are playing well. So this is a big test of the Bills. They need to win this to show that they belong in the top 8 of the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, we chatted with John Murphy a few weeks back. The Bills were 4-0 at the time, and we asked John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills, are the Bills an upper echelon team? He wasn't so convinced at the time, so we got to see what happens in the next few weeks. Didn't play all that well against the Chiefs, and was it the Titans they lost to? I believe so.
Casey.
And now they get the Seahawks, another upper echelon team today. Another test for the Bills. I hope they meet the challenge today. To all the Pittsburgh Steeler fans, there's zillions of them in Southern Ontario.
There's more coming out of the closet too.
They're flying. They're on cloud nine, man. 7-0. They're getting their Super Bowl tickets ready already. And Steelers are. I see the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Seahawks when the dust settles, and we'll go from there. Naz, we've run out of time again. Brandon, our producer. I know you've had.
Some have the listeners just think, Toronto Maple Leafs will be the only team playing in Toronto this season.
We'll leave it on that note. Brandon, our producer, thanks for resolving our challenges. We're out of time. We'll see you next week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.